Cities Environment and Climate Committee will come to order. A quorum is present. It is February 1st at 12:30, and we are here at the Minnesota Senate building. We're going to hear three bills today. I think it's a very manageable workload for us as a committee. I would guess we would be out of here between 60 and 90 minutes. And with that, we'd like to invite Senator Dames forward with Senate File 534, please. Senator Dames, while you're getting settled up there, we're going to have Senator Matthews with a quick comment. Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to encourage as a friendly reminder that the bills on the agenda we got notice of on Monday, and would ask if we could try to, these for today, no issues on the agenda today, but if we could try to do the 72-hour rule as much as possible, that would be a big help to the minority and to the public. So wanted to make a friendly reminder and encouragement for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Matthews. That's a very good point. That should be every committee's goal. With that, Senator Dames, welcome to the committee. You have your bill ready to present, and when ready, fire away.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here today to present Senate File Number 534. Senate File Number 534 is a bill for Granite Falls for their Granite Falls Hydroelectric Generating Facility. We're asking for $2.4 million roughly to be taken from the Renewal Development Account in order to help with this process. Today, I have Crystal Johnson, who is the City Administrator for Granite Falls, here to explain what the money will be used for and go into the request a little more in depth. So, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I'll turn it over to Ms. Johnson.
Thank you very much, Senator. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Johnson. If you could, please, by giving your name and then present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Crystal Johnson. I am the city manager for Granite Falls. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just want to start out by saying thank you for the opportunity to be here and talk about our bill. I know how extremely busy all of you are, so this really does mean a lot on behalf of our community to be here today. And before we go into the request here at hand, I think it would be helpful just to share a little bit of history as to how we got here. The city of Granite Falls is a host community to the Xcel-owned NSP plant that was recently finalized in being decommissioned and torn down. This created a financial hardship for our community. We are a population of a little less than 2,700, and it resulted in a tax-based loss of a little over $100,000, which is quite large for a community our size. And as I shared, presented a financial hardship for our community. So as a result of having multiple conversations with key city officials, our city council, myself, one idea that came out of those discussions is the city of Granite Falls also is our electric utility provider, and we own a hydroelectric facility. And this facility houses three turbines. Turbines one and two were recently replaced. However, we do have a third turbine that is currently not active. And the cost to replace that turbine in connection with the loss that we have as a result of the NSP plant, plus expenses already with turbines one and two, was not financially feasible for the city to do this project alone. But once turbine number three would be active, these three turbines are not enough to generate power for the entire community, so we do purchase on the open market. And once turbine number three is active, it will allow us in a cost savings from purchasing that power cost difference, which roughly calculates to about the same as our loss that we are experiencing with the NSP plant. So what we are doing is we actually increased our transfer from our electrical utility into our general fund to offset that property tax loss difference. But by moving forward and completing this project will help us be able to get turbine number three active and to be able to continue doing that transfer, which in return will not impact to our tax base, that financial hardship. So with that little bit of history, we did come before a request for consideration for renewable account funding. That bill was approved. That was to move forward with installing turbine number 3, as well as to do some repair work to the facility. Unfortunately, since that time, COVID happened. We've seen costs in material increases, part shortages, labor cost increases. So the bid that we did receive for turbine number 3, the lowest bid, unfortunately, was $490,000 higher than what was originally anticipated. We were in the bill last year for that cost difference, as well as finalizing repairs or completion of the repairs identified for the facility as well. That received a lot of support from everyone. Unfortunately, that bill did not move forward. It was tabled, I believe, for something else in that bill. And so we are here before you to ask for that same support and being able to move forward and complete this project that was started with RDA funding and be able to help our community during our struggles that we are experiencing with the closure of the NSP plant. And with that, I also do want to share, too, if any of you are interested, we would be happy to give a tour of our facility and show you in person what we were doing, what we are doing as well. It's a very unique form of energy, carbon-free, clean form of renewable energy, friendly towards the environment. It's a unique feature to have in our community, in our state, and we hope by having these improvements done, this facility will last many, many years to come. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. First of all, members, any questions for either the author of the bill or for Ms. Johnson? Seeing none, on behalf of the committee, Ms. Johnson, one of our goals, and Senator Matthews and I have talked about this, is to pay attention to host communities and pay attention to the transition. And so I want to thank you for taking the time to bring this. Senator Dames, it's our intention to lay the bill over for possible inclusion, but certainly made a good presentation here today and given the timing, hoping the committee will look favorably on it when the time comes. With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
With that, Senator Hoffman is here to present Senate File 432. Senator Hoffman, while you're getting settled in.
I'm never settled in, Mr. Chair.
When you're getting as settled in as you can be, welcome to your committee, Senator Hoffman, and when you're ready, please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 432. Bill provides a $5 million appropriation for fiscal years 24, just in fiscal year 24, from the RDA for the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. I don't know if you've heard that we have the best Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and the Blaine Field that you have in the United States is right here in your backyard. The funding, Mr. Chair, is going to be used to replace the roof and install solar arrays on the National Sports Center in Blaine. Project was added by the Senate Energy Omnibus Bill in 2022 as an appropriation for $3.5 million, and it was included in the final conference committee agreement in 2022, last year. It was included in that final agreement, but it failed to become law. The main difference between the language in 2022 and the language here today is the most current language just allows us to utilize the RDA appropriation to used for that roof replacement. So again, this was a package that was in 2022 Energy Omnibus Bill that maybe Senator Matthews is aware of, that it's the same as it was back then. So, Mr. Chair, with that, thank you very much. I hope you guys can support this and roll it into your omnibus.
Thank you very much, Senator Hoffman. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of that $5 million, Senator Hoffman, how much is for the solar panels and how much is for the roof?
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, thank you for that. I don't have that breakdown in front of me, but I do know this. The reason why that the roof needs to be part of that piece is that as we established the sports, amateur sports arena in those buildings, lo and behold, there was never any money set aside for updating that, and they're always going for appropriations on updating. So they have to change the roof matter because of the panels they're putting in. I can get that for you, Senator Weber.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just seems to me, I mean, the solar panels, there's no question that that's an appropriate use of RDA funds. Replacement of roofs should actually fall under capital investment or the bonding program. And if we're going to start using RDA funds for normal repair and replacement purposes, that fund's going to run out of money fairly quickly. And I think that there should be some distinction made in this bill for that purpose.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Senator Hoffman, to that point.
Mr. Chair, to that point, yeah, absolutely. I think the reason was last year we had it was coming from a different bucket, and it was like, well, where can we establish that funding to? But I understand your point, and that's always a connotation. Matter of fact, in the legacy, the LCCMR language that is coming up, I believe, tomorrow, there's some comments about capital and building trails and bridges and utilizing should be really capital money. So to that point, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Weber, any follow-up?
No.
All right. Any other members? Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Senator Hoffman. Is there any local match with this $5
million? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. No, this was appropriated because of the fact that that establishment up there is really, it was legislatively, you were probably back on the school board when it was legislatively approved, but it was legislatively approved to build this years ago. And it just so happens that, you know, we're the ones responsible for the update in that, and this is just another way of finding, you know, funds to make that a reality. So, but thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Grunhagen, any follow-up?
Just one quick other question. Is the roof really need to be replaced at this point, or is this a modification?
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, yeah, Senator Grunhagen, if you notice anything that comes from the Sports Commission, you know, and you could even follow up with some conversations from the folks up in Blaine, that is a constant, you know, the infrastructure piece, it's there. You know, that's just something that we did not fund that enough to keep that up in the infrastructure. And you'll see that most of their requests for funding, to Senator Grunhagen's point, is usually to keep the infrastructure up. They used to have a velodrome. Do you remember? Did you ever see bicycles on the old wood velodromes? And it was it was so costly. It was cool. I mean, but you had people from all over the United States that would come just to use this little bicycle velodrome. But because they could not get appropriation to keep the cost of that up, they just ended up tearing that down. And so what ends up happening on the fiscal impact locally is then you don't have people come to Blaine and go shopping to restaurants. And actually, there's thousands of people that come to that area every year because of the sports center itself. With soccer, of course, you know, that's where the National Sports Center is actually located. So it's all integrated. So thank you for that question, Senator Grunhagen.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Grunhagen. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hoffman, in a committee earlier this year, you made a comment, so I'm wondering, are you being absolutely accurate with your details on this one as well?
Senator Hoffman, to the details.
Oh, Senator, to the details, Senator. Yes, Senator Frentz, I am absolutely accurate on this. Matter of fact, if you wanted to, you could contact in the other chamber, you know, a former Senator Jerry Newton, who now is in that chamber that you used to belong to. He would probably validate, the command sergeant major would probably validate that. In this case, I am being accurate on that, 100% accurate. So thank you for that question.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Rarick, any follow-up? Seeing none. Any other member questions for Senator Hoffman? All right, seeing none. Senator Hoffman, thank you very much. As you know, our plan is to lay this over for possible inclusion. And with that, any final remarks, Senator Hoffman?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. And to Senator Weber's point, I mean, there's a whole systems issue regarding all the capital and all the improvements and stuff. And maybe that's, you know, not just specifically here because I think it needs to be replaced, but on the greater scheme of questions, he brings up a pretty valid point. So thank you very much, members.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, and thank you, members. With that, the bill is laid over. Moving right along, our final bill on our agenda here is Senate File 315 to be presented by Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if
Senator Herr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'd like to call my testifier to sit over here first so that, you know, we can move it along.
Do you want to go through the list, or do you want me to call him up?
I can go through the list. Okay. Mr. Joshua Lewis, Jose Perez, and Anita Grace, and John Pacheco.
Mr. Lewis, Mr. Pacheco, and Ms. Grace are the witnesses. Please come forward. Senator Herr, while your witnesses are getting settled in, if you could please explain the bill to the committee members, and then from there we'll have your testifiers present.
Yes.
Senator Herr.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 315. This initiative was started by our former Senator Torres Ray. She's also here with us, and so I'm honored to pick up the baton this year. So Senate File 315 will ensure that energy utility companies will collect and report demographic information related to all procurement goals and actual spending. We believe that addressing diversity and inclusion is vital to the future of the companies and the energy sector. We know that Minnesota will be investing very heavily in our energy sector for the foreseeable future in order to reduce the state greenhouse gas emission to confronting the challenge of climate change. These investments will enable an unprecedented level of construction for electric utilities in Minnesota, and it's vital that workers from all of Minnesota's diversity communities get to participate in this robust growth. People of color, indigenous people, veterans, and women are seriously underrepresented in all areas of the energy sector. The Public Utility Commission has recognized this and created an energy utility diversity stakeholder group to study the matter. This group submitted their report on January 15, 2020. You have a copy of the report and the recommendation, but the legislature had yet to take action to support increasing diversity in employment, contracting, and supply by electric utilities in Minnesota. Senate File 315 is a necessary first step in addressing diversity in the energy sector. Utility will collect and analyze detailed and accurate demographic data in order to inform their efforts to attract and retain a diverse workforce and set of contractors and supplies. These actions will position the companies and the state of Minnesota in a competitive place to tackle the climate crisis. We need to promote equity at all levels. People of color and indigenous are disproportionately impacted by climate change, and they need and deserve to be involved in all activities in our state. It's undertaking to develop a competitive energy sector that responds to the needs of the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is my introduction to this bill, Senate File 315, and now I'll pass on to the testifier as a call of the chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Herr. Do you have a particular testifier you'd like to go first? Okay. Yes, go ahead. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Pacheco, and I'm the president of the Latino Chamber of Commerce of Minnesota. We have over 600 members statewide. Our goal is to facilitate the economic growth of Latino businesses and, by extension, the economic growth of Minnesota. In 2020, I had the privilege of serving on the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission Energy Utility Diversity Shareholder Group. I was co-chair of the supplier diversity section of that, but also worked on the workforce. And I'll also inform you that the other co-chair was a representative from Xcel Energy. This was a shareholder group that included the utilities, communities, and other organizations that were interested in this. Again, our goal was to examine the challenges, opportunities for Minnesota's energy utilities to attract a diverse workforce and to increase supplier diversity. As you all may be aware, there continues to be a level of disparities in regards to workforce and supplier diversity impacting people of color, the indigenous, and women in the utility industry. We really see this as an opportunity to provide for the utilities to provide the companies that serve Minnesota residents with collecting report demographic information to improve the diversity of utilities workforce and suppliers. I want to be clear here that this is not an affirmative action effort. This is more of a partnership effort in how we collectively can increase the representation in utilities. And truth be known, years ago I did work at the utility. I worked at Xcel, and I thought it was a great company, still do, and they have the capacity to put these kind of reports. We'll acknowledge that a lot of the smaller utilities and other entities may not have this capacity. But I think, again, if we look at this as an opportunity, look at this as a collective here, we hope to join the utilities in achieving these goals. If this legislation is adopted, we'll have better information about the challenges faced by the companies to increase workforce and supplier diversity, including actions they could take to help identify potential employees, vendors, and a list of successful candidates. We see this as an important step, in early step, and starting to look at the future, not only climate change, but the diversity within our state. We'll start early with our population is over 40% of them under 21. And so looking at this is a great career. It's a great effort to be a part of. And so the Latino Chamber of Commerce hopes you vote in support of this effort. And we stand ready to partner with the utilities across the state for all of us collectively to achieve the right representation that we think will help contribute to the growth of the utility sector, climate change, and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pacheco. Members, we can go questions if there are any, testifier by testifier, if you want. Questions for Mr. Pacheco? I do have one, but Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Pacheco, you mentioned in your comments that you realize this might be difficult for some of the smaller utilities. Are there, as you're talking about this, are there going to be some aids for them or some potential exemptions for them if they're unable to? Has that been talked about at all?
Thank you, Senator Rarick. I had something of the same question. If I wrote it down correctly, Mr. Pacheco, you said smaller utilities may not have the capacity. So I know the committee is interested in diversity reporting, but if there's a smaller utility without the capacity, I think Senator Rarick's question is my question. What can we do to try to serve both goals? Mr. Pacheco?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator. I noted that because I just wanted to be clear that people understood the shareholder group represented those organizations as well, and they were represented, and they made it clear that, you know, we're in this kind of level of capacity to do this. We don't have full-time people that would do this compared to a larger utility. And so they also supported our efforts there. And what we did put down is that we would work together, and the next step for the Public Utilities Commission is to look at how we do facilitate getting that level of representation up there. And maybe if they start out smaller. But I will tell you, we also had a number of the representatives representing the community or organizations that were representing conservation and others that stand ready as well to assist in that development. I don't know that we can do it overnight. Some of the large utilities have the history and can also assist us in that. But again, I don't see it as a quota. I see it as an opportunity. And I recognize that, and I wanted to make sure that you knew we recognize it as well.
Thank you, Mr. Pacheco. Senator Rarick, you're good? Senator Green, and then I think I had Senator Grunhagen first. So Senator Grunhagen, then Senator Green. Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Mr. Pacheco, I do have a couple concerns I'll just run by. I didn't get a chance to review the bill very much before the meeting, but I was kind of going through it. And I happen to know a person in the metro area. He owns a business that works in this particular area, and he is under a diversity rule. And when he bids a job, because he doesn't have the number of, meet a number of a diversity standard, he gets penalized on the bid, according to him, $10,000 per person he has to add, that he doesn't have for diversity. So he has to add $10,000 for every person he doesn't have to meet the diversity standard. Now, he just said that the employment market is very tight. He has tried time and again to hire people to meet that diversity standard. Occasionally he gets somebody, but they've left him for maybe a better job or whatever reason. You know what I mean? So again, he's putting the effort in, but because he hasn't been able to maintain it, this is in the metro area, he's being penalized $10,000 for each person that he doesn't have to meet that standard. So even though he might be the lowest bid, the most qualified bid, once he has to add this $10,000 per person, he loses the bid for his company. So, I mean, when I look at this bill and I see other bills that have gone through here, that the government tends to penalize companies if they don't meet a certain standard. I don't see it in this bill. Again, I didn't look at all the references, but it looks like the same thing eventually. In other words, when some of these small co-ops, rural ones especially, they may put the effort in, but what if they can't find somebody to meet that standard? And so if you could put some type of exemption, or the author, in the bill to give some flexibility to people who try, or companies who try, but don't meet that standard. And again, maybe I'm being a little over-concerned, but that's what I've seen actually happened with similar type bills as this, okay? Appreciate any response.
Mr. Pacheco.
Mr. Chair, Senator, speaking to the specific example you've given, I wouldn't know the rules governing what your individual you're speaking to, what his bid meant or not, so I couldn't speak to that. I think overall, if you look at the future of the industry in the state of Minnesota, it's becoming more and more diverse. Where before you would say in an affirmative action, if you don't meet this quality, you're out. The fact is that we can't stand still anymore, and you're going to be looking, and we're going to be looking at everybody who's capable to do the jobs. We're challenged for workforce right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be more of a challenge, and if we don't look at things like this, look at opportunities and understanding the challenges. Now, again, I did recognize the capacity issue, and I think also this we listened quite a bit about the different challenges both Greater Minnesota and the metro area had. So wasn't it really just a metro issue as well? So I'm not the author of the bill, obviously. I'm here to support it, and I continue to support it. And so I think in regards to any change or anything, you speak to the author. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pacheco. Any follow-up, Senator Grunhagen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, thanks for that response. And again, I'm not asking you to comment on his particular. I'm just saying that was an example of where diversity was put in, and he's being penalized even though he's made a good faith effort to meet that standard. And again, I want everybody to be treated equally regardless of their ethnic background and give them an opportunity. But on the other hand, the business owner wants somebody qualified too for safety reasons, to get the job done in a timely manner. And I see this bill sliding down that same slope of we're going to penalize you if you don't do it. Even if there aren't people to hire to put into that position, they're going to get penalized. And I guess I saw the author raise his hand. And if there'd be language of some type to take a look at that to make sure we're not penalizing companies that are making a good faith effort, if he'd like to respond.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. I know that Senator Herr was going to make a comment. So, Senator Green, I'm going to go to Senator Herr to that point. Senator Herr.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen, for your for your example. And this bill will be laid over. But I can assure you that it has no language that will penalize any companies. And, you know, with that situation, maybe it's a unique situation that a person, if they're not diverse enough, they will be penalized, you know. So that may be a rare case, but I'll be happy to look at language that can improve. This bill is talk about equity and equality and make sure everyone are at the table and everyone are hired and no one should be penalized, whichever business owner that is. So that's my answer, and back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Herr. Senator Grunhagen, is that
appreciate that. I'll see if I can find something to address that, and then maybe we could talk, okay?
I'm open.
Thanks for your response.
Thank you very much, Senator Grunhagen. Thanks, Senator Herr. We're going to go now to Senator Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be for either the author or any of the testifiers. It triggered something that I've been trying to work on for some time. And that is, instead of really going after and mandating people have to meet a quota, is there anything either on the forefront or that you've considered as far as training? I know that for some time we've been looking at trying to get training even into the junior high and start, if a student is moving toward the trades, for instance, or anything else, and training up people in those positions, because all across the board, and I think this is an issue that's not greater Minnesota or metro Minnesota, it's an area where we don't have a big enough workforce, period. And so are you considering anything in those areas where if the state's not going to step up and help these schools? I know in our area private businesses have, and they've even put equipment and training policies and giving money and equipment to schools, just looking forward to the future workforce.
Thank you, Senator Green. Senator Herr, you can have that, or you can ask a testifier to take it.
Yeah, I let me respond first. And
Senator Herr.
I can pass on to the testifier. And Senator Green, that's exactly what this bill will lead to. It need to bring equity to a certain level. And then, you know, we need to have pipeline, whether it's at high learning or at school level. And I know there are other legislation that will try to bring the shop class back to high school. And if that did make it through, it will empower this legislation as well. So thank you for your question there.
Thank you, Senator Herr. Mr. Pacheco, you want to comment?
Yeah.
Fire away.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just directly to your question there, we also work with an organization called Comunidades Latinas United in Service. It's called CLUES. And I've worked with them in Wilmer, Minnesota, regarding healthcare workers. They were asking us, how do we draw more healthcare workers? And we went in the community, met with families, and we were able to put a couple successful cohorts together. Also worked with the trade and tile setters and painters here in the metro area. And then personally, I worked on a partnership with the Carpenters Union down in Rochester. So we believe in the training part of it. Again, I maybe didn't make it clear enough, but I don't see this as an affirmative action or punitive effort. I really think it is a time for all of us to have this coalition building around this. Not a day goes by that someone's not coming calling the Latino Chamber, asking for workers, asking for vendors, asking for small business. And so I think we're at an ideal time for us to make progress in all of those areas.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pacheco. Senator Green, any follow-up?
Yeah, just one comment. I'm very glad to hear that. But by your own admission, by what you're talking about there, is that the workforce that you're going to mandate isn't there yet. So it would be nice to see the workforce there before the mandates come. Otherwise, you know, you're putting forth something that maybe can't be met yet. So, but thank you for those efforts. I'm very glad to hear that.
Thank you, Senator Green. With that, we're going to go to Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Herr for bringing this bill and for the work of Mr. Pacheco and others who did all the efforts this past year in looking at this idea and bringing forward this recommendation. And I would just encourage members to read the language on page 8, section 3, and really understand what we're talking about. This is about as soft approach to this whole subject as you can possibly imagine. There will be no penalization of $10,000 for a failure to have a diverse workforce. There's no quotas or mandates. This is a reporting requirement. This is an effort to encourage the utilities to take a look at what they're doing to improve the diversity of their workforce and their suppliers, to set their own goals, and simply to think about the subject and, you know, create some internal goals for themselves and take advantage of some best practices and learn from other efforts that are successful and report on their thoughts, their goals, their efforts to the utility. That's all it is. It's just encouraging. It's very soft. It's very gentle. It's very supportive. It's easy. It's not hard. Even you know, the issues that were raised about small organizations not having the capacity, it's hard to imagine that even a small organization couldn't simply say, hey, what can we do to make our supply chain and our workforce a little more diverse? How maybe we'll try to, you know, up the numbers, and then we're going to, you know, type up a little report to the PUC on occasion and talk about what we're trying to do and how we're going about it. So I don't know. I think a lot is being made of something I think is quite subtle and gentle and fairly nuanced. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for that comment, Senator Dibble. But, you know, based, you know, I've been on the school board for 16 years, and then I've been here for a number of years. And when I see these reports, what I find is that today it's a report, tomorrow it's a mandate when the statistics come in. So that's why I was voicing that concern to the author, because I've just seen it too many times where they, well, we want this report. Well, then we get the report. And then what do we do with it? Well, the next thing you know, we mandate and penalize if you don't follow the report. So again, I agree the language is soft, but sorry for my skepticism, but I've just seen this too many times run through the government. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. Members, any other comments? Senator Herr, I know you have other testifiers. Maybe we could move on to them.
Yes.
I show Lewis, Harris, Grace, and Katie, and I believe Ms. Grace is available online. So you go in any order you want, Senator Herr.
Yes, we'll have person on my left here, Joshua Lewis. Could go ahead.
Mr. Lewis, welcome to the committee, and thank you for your patience. Introduce yourself and present your testimony, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Nick Frentz, and the committee. I'm grateful for the opportunity to discuss this important matter for our community. My name is Joshua Lewis, and I've been a labor organizer with Working America previously for the past 7 years, and currently I'm a climate justice organizer for Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. And both IPL and Honor the Earth strongly support the passage of this file, and we thank you for your ongoing efforts to increase the participation of color and indigenous people in the energy sector. This bill will ensure that utility companies serve Minnesota residents with that they will, and these are companies that are receiving year after year hundreds of millions of dollars in profit, mind you, that's not necessarily being invested back into our communities. This will ensure that these companies will in the least collect and report demographic information to improve the diversity of the utility's workforce and suppliers. Addressing diversity and inclusion is vital as companies, policymakers, and communities take steps to meet the challenge of climate change, which has been shown to impact marginalized populations disproportionately and is going to receive hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of investment at the state and also from federal money. And we need to know that that money is being going into places in the community and building wealth-building opportunities in an equitable manner. These reports will help the state support the utility's goals and efforts to increase diversity in the workplace, including current workforce representation, percentages in all procurement goals, and actual spending for female-owned, minority-owned, veteran-owned, and small business enterprises each year. If this legislation is adopted, we'll have the information about the challenges faced by the companies to increase workforce and supplier diversity, including suggestions regarding action they could take to help identify potential employees and vendors, provide a list of successful actions taken to increase workforce and supplier diversity and general best practices. Many new good-paying jobs are being created in the energy industry every day, and Indigenous people and people of color need to have access to these jobs. We need your support to train and open the door to our communities in this industry. We are ready to partner with Senator Herr, with Hispanics in Energy, with the EJ Table, other organizations, the utility companies in Minnesota, the Public Utilities Commission, and all the people who have worked since 2019 to increase the participation of people of color and Indigenous people in the energy sector. We must examine the challenges and opportunities Minnesota's energy utilities face to attract a diverse workforce with the skills needed to advance a 21st century industry and to increase supplier diversity of energy utilities. We encourage members to review the findings of the Energy Utility Diversity Stakeholder Group report submitted January 15th, 2020, which this legislation aims to address. Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair Friends.
Thank you very much, Chair Mr. Lewis. Friends. Members, we're still going to go testifier by testifier. Any questions for Mr. Lewis? All right, seeing none. Thank you very much, Senator Herr. I show Ms. Katie, Ms. Grace, and Scuba Harris, totally up to you what order you go in. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for sitting down. Whoever wants to go first, please signify that you want to go first by introducing yourself and then presenting your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Friends and members of the Energy, Utilities, and Environment and Climate Committee. My name is Shuba Harris, and I am an attorney at Xcel Energy. I am pleased to be here today to share with the committee the company's support of Senate File 315. I would like to thank Senator Herr for introducing this bill and also thank all of our Minnesota Public Utilities commissioners for their efforts to prioritize diversity and equity in commission proceedings. We share these goals, which is why we support this bill. At Xcel Energy, we aim to create an inclusive work culture where employees are treated equitably and diversity is not only accepted, but celebrated. We strongly believe in the value that a diverse workforce brings and the importance of having employees who reflect the communities and the customers we serve. We know that our most successful ideas and outcomes result from the collaboration between employees with a diverse set of experiences, backgrounds, and perspectives. By viewing opportunities and challenges through multiple lenses, we know we are able to better leverage our strengths and achieve our strategic priorities to deliver a clean, reliable, and affordable electric services. Our CEO and senior leadership team are striving for diversity and equity to be an integral part of who we are as an organization, how we operate, and how we create a sustainable future. We have taken a variety of steps to promote a diverse and inclusive culture. A few highlights include adding an incentive-based metric to the corporate scorecard in 2021, tying a portion of incentive pay to diversity, equity, and inclusion. We've implemented an executive sponsorship program where top leaders are personally communicating and sponsoring diverse top talent throughout the organization. In 2022, after the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission order in our resource plan, we established an equity stakeholder advisory group to deepen our relationships with communities of color and elevate the voices of BIPOC communities in utility decision making. Last year, we also sought and received approval of a workforce training program to create a diverse pipeline for energy-related construction occupations. These efforts are resulting in progress. Our current senior executive team is comprised of 33% female and 22% ethnically or racially diverse leaders. that set a strong example by fostering an open and accepting environment. The senior leadership team, comprised of vice presidents above, has increased its female representation by 6% and diverse representation by 5% over the past 3 years. Every year, we set targets to further broaden our supplier base, encouraging businesses owned by women or veterans or whose owners are ethnically or racially diverse to participate in our procurement process. Through our engagement with small and diverse suppliers, we estimate that we have contributed approximately $2.9 billion to the U.S. economy and supported nearly 19,600 jobs in 2021 across our service territory. We have been nationally recognized for our efforts. In 2022, Xcel Energy was recognized by Ethisphere as one of the world's most ethical companies, by Fortune as one of the world's most admired companies, by Human Rights as one of the best places to work for LGBTQ equality, and by Military Times as one of the best places for veterans. We are proud of the steps we've taken and the direction we are headed. We are committed to continuing to take steps to lead our industry in achieving our diversity and inclusion goals. We appreciate the transparency this bill will provide to ensuring our workforce representation demographics and goals are accessible to the public, including our Minnesota customers. Recognizing and celebrating our differences and championing an inclusive culture strengthens our organization and the world in which we live. I thank you for the opportunity to address this committee today and to share some of the company's efforts to ensure a diverse and inclusive workplace and to share our support for this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Members, questions for Ms. Harris? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming to the committee. Thank you for your testimony. And with that, Ms. Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jennifer Katie, the Director of Regulatory Affairs for Minnesota Power. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today and support Senate File 315 this afternoon. If you're not familiar, Minnesota Power serves 145,000 customers in northern Minnesota, and ALLETE is our corporate entity headquartered in Duluth. ALLETE is a longtime champion of women in energy and diversity in all forms. Our view of sustainability in action includes nurturing a more diverse workplace and supply chain that helps develop stronger and more equitable communities, ultimately contributing to our collective success. As evidence of this commitment, last year ALLETE was recognized for the third year in a row as a company of special distinction in Women's Corporate Leadership Census of Minnesota's largest public companies. ALLETE is governed by a corporate board of directors that is 50% female, with women as both our president, CEO, and chair of the board, and lead external director. Additionally, 50% of ALLETE's executive officers are women. In 2019, when the legislature directed the Public Utilities Commission to convene a stakeholder group to examine the challenges and opportunities for utilities to attract a diverse workforce and increase diversity in our supply chain, Minnesota Power was all in. I was proud to serve alongside Anita Grace and Jose Perez as the co-vice chair of the Energy Utilities Diversity Stakeholder Group, or EUDG, which reported our work back to the legislature in 2020. This important body of work captured consensus recommendations from over 70 stakeholders representing utilities, organized labor, community groups, advocates, and state government representatives. But I'm proud to say that the EUDG's report did not just sit on a shelf somewhere, but in fact, we took the recommendations and implemented them immediately. With our commission's approval, Minnesota Power built 3 solar projects during the COVID-19 pandemic that leveraged every single one of the EUDG's recommendations on supplier diversity, going so far as to hiring a dedicated professional to focus on that area alone. So I'm happy to be here today to share our work and our support of SF 315. However, I would encourage the committee to leverage the thoughtful work of the EUDG in this legislation. For example, this group identified 7 categories of diverse suppliers, several more than are currently identified in this bill. They include LGBTQ-owned businesses, small economically disadvantaged businesses, disability-owned enterprises, and hub-zone businesses. Ensuring we capture all of the categories of diverse suppliers in our reporting will ensure our diversity efforts are reflective of the communities we serve. We appreciate the good work of Senator Herr and others on this legislation and are happy to collaborate more as this bill moves forward. Thank you for your time today, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cady, very much. Members, any questions for Ms. Cady? Senator Grunhagen.
Hopefully I'm not overdue. I only ask 2% of the questions I want to. Okay.
Fire away, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for your testimony. Mine is more a little bit more of a statement, is that I just want to make clear, we desperately need the minorities in our state here to become part of the workforce, okay? I support those efforts. I do think, though, there's one additional thing we could do to really enhance that, and that is school choice where the money follows the child and allow these minority children to get out of these failing schools, since we have one of the worst achievement gaps in the nation. That would do much more than this bill to help the minorities get into the middle class, which is where we want them. We need them desperately, but we have to have them properly educated. They're not right now, and we spent billions trying under the current system. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Senator Grunhagen. I don't want to have an Education Policy Committee hearing breakout in the midst of our Energy Committee hearing breakout. Ms. Cady, if you want to respond, you can. Otherwise, okay, thanks very much. Thanks, Senator Grunhagen. Any other members' questions for Ms. Cady? If not, thank you very much, Ms. Cady. Senator Herr, I believe your last two testifiers are online. Is that right?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. We have on the form here Anita Grace, and then I believe also Jose Perez. Ms. Grace, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Not only can we hear you, but we can see you. Thanks very much. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself and give your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Anita Grace. I'm president and CEO of Grace Multicultural, a multicultural marketing and communications firm based here in Minnesota. I'm also honored to be the co-vice chair of the Energy Utility Diversity Group, which Ms. Cady just spoke a little bit about. We worked with that group for nearly a year with stakeholders from utility companies, community representation, different chambers of commerce, a wide variety of people represented there and companies and interests. And we were able to come up with a recommendation report that was turned in January of 2020. And based on the conversations and my work within the multicultural space for 23 years, I can see the positive impact that the passage of this bill would have not only on the opportunities for the diverse communities in workforce and in vendor, but also too for the utility companies. It's important that the companies reflect the communities that they serve. And also I see opportunities available that need to be filled, and without making concerted efforts to reach the diverse community and include them and making sure they're getting the message of both that there's jobs available and that vendors are needed, there's a huge gap that's missing for both sides, for both the people and the companies involved. So the two of them could support each other in a badly needed gap that that we know should be filled, and that could be filled with diverse communities. I also, too, as a part of that group, we did have a discussion that some of the smaller utility companies might not have the resources or the bandwidth or the time to start putting some of these things in place. However, we did come up in that same report with several recommendations of shared resources, marketing and communications campaigns, things that would help them get through this without having to expand their budgets or capacities specifically for this. But additionally, letting the communities know through a communications campaign, but that's specifically targeted to the multicultural channels. Even though we live here in Minnesota, a lot of us of Hispanic descent are speaking Spanish. A lot of the Hmong are speaking Hmong at home. The African-American community a lot hang out where in an African-American environment and as far as media consumption goes. So also to spreading the information around that this is happening, that it's a mission, that there's opportunities available, will help fill some of those spaces that go unfilled. Some of those jobs that I heard an example of a gentleman who said he was having a hard time hiring qualified people. But a lot of this could be solved by making sure the message is actually getting into the communities in their languages. Again, they'll speak English. We live in the United States, but that's where our comfort is and where we consume our information. So there are recommendations to help get this through. We've seen Minnesota Power. We watched them from that, as Ms. Katie stated, take those recommendations and have successful plans that they were able to execute while utilizing all of them. And so I'm here as a community, someone who works with the community and who's worked with the EUDG to speak on behalf of this bill in support of it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Grace. Members, any questions? Questions for Ms. Grace? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Thanks for visiting the committee. And with that, our final witness today is Jose Perez. Mr. Perez, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Again, not only can we hear you, but we can see you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and provide your testimony. Perez.
I'm Jose Perez, and I'm president of Hispanics in Energy. It's a national group. Started in California and slowly has gone towards the east. We serve in 23 states now. Minnesota, we began working with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission several years ago to look at this topic of inclusion and diversity within both the business and the workforce. And we're very happy that Minnesota decided to adopt this policy to create the Energy Utility Diversity Group, which I happen to chair. And so it was a great experience because not only did the group focus on how do we increase diverse business participation in the economic opportunities that are created by the commission and by the utilities, but also to take a look at how we could do long-term workforce development. And if you read that study, it's pretty comprehensive. It also addressed the issue of workforce, which was touched upon earlier by one of the senators. And I can tell you that we are very deeply concerned about the issue of education. It affects the workforce, not only for the energy sector, but all sectors. And so it's something that definitely needs to be addressed in another forum, because it's not just energy. But I did want to share with you that we're very strongly in support of the legislation of this proposal. There's a lot of reasons for that, but the biggest one is that we've worked with several states where they've adopted similar policies, and I can tell you that the big benefit is that you increase the size of bidders that are submitting bids when the request for proposals are out, not only from small businesses, but from diverse businesses. And so the companies have better choices. So sometimes they get a lower bid, better quality, better delivery. I mean, there's a lot of great reasons for why this makes sense. By allowing the collection of data, it allows communities to examine how their community is doing against these opportunities, and if they're not enough bidders coming from those communities, it urges them to find out if the information is not going out to the small businesses, or maybe that community hasn't developed businesses in that arena, and maybe it should consider to do that. And then the third thing that I find really very warm-hearting is the opportunity where community contacts the company and they begin to engage together to figure out solutions and increase participation from that community in the bidding process. And it's similar in the workforce arena. And so so we think that it's a wonderful thing if we could get this policy adopted. It doesn't set any quotas, it doesn't do any preferences, and it really just focuses on data collection. It allows external the external public groups like ours and the other interest groups who are part of the EUDG to examine how their community is doing and if there's any shortfalls, and encourages dialogue and communication with individuals that are doing supply chain functions for the companies. And so it's a tremendous benefit for the people of Minnesota. That's why we strongly urge your yes vote on this, and I'm willing to answer any questions that you would like.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Perez. Members, any questions for Mr. Perez? Seeing none, thank you again, sir, for coming to the committee, and thank you for your testimony. Any members of the public who did not let us know they wanted to testify in the audience who wish to come forward and give any testimony on Senate File 315? Seeing none, members, any comments? Otherwise, we'll go to the author of the bill for final comments. Seeing no member comments, Senator Herr, as you know, it's the committee's intention to lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Do you have any final comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill, Senate File 315, and it's exactly what you heard. It is a data collection and report bill to help our energy and our utility companies to improve ourselves, to make ourselves better. You know, like Senator Paul Wellstone said, you know, we do better when we all do better, and this is along the same line. And as one of the testifiers did mention, that it's not an affirmative action, it's a coalition building for us to make it better in our state. So thank you for hearing this bill, and I look forward to the layover of Senate File 315 in your omnibus bill.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Herr. With that, Senate File 315 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, that's the end of our agenda on Monday. We're planning on taking up testimony regarding emerging and advancing technologies. So as opposed to hearing bills, we're going to hear about some of the great ideas that are coming forward. With that, seeing no more business, the committee is adjourned.